Hi, it's Dacker. If you're like me, you probably have a wide variety of interests when it comes to your podcast listening. A little psychology here, a little history there, which is why I want to recommend a show perfect for those with eclectic tastes. Freakonomics Radio has more than 10 years and 500 episodes worth of answers to your biggest questions. But don't be fooled, it's not just for economists and business experts. Every week, Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of everything. With the help of guests, including CEOs, artists, and Nobel laureates, he breaks down all sorts of things, like how we choose the people we marry and why using swear words might be more important than you think. So don't miss out. Follow Freakonomics Radio right now, wherever you get your podcasts. The Science of Happiness is proudly brought to you by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Discover the latest findings in neuroscience, cosmology, and the origins of life at templeton.org.
I was at my aunt's 90th birthday party on Saturday night, and my cousin was talking about how he had had a scary colonoscopy where they'd found polyps. And I flashed back to my own colonoscopy, my first and only colonoscopy. And I had never written this down or really dwelled on it, where, you know, they kind of put you under. And I remember liking the doctor. And I remember when it was done, the nurse coming over and saying, "You're fine, you can go home." And I said, "Can I say goodbye to the doctor?" He was really nice talking to him. And she said, "He doesn't want to talk to you." And I said, "Why not?" She says, "You know the things you said to him?" And I said, "Well, what'd I say?" She said, "Well, the thing that really ticked him off was, you looked up and you said, in the middle of your colonoscopy, you said, when you were a little boy, did you imagine this is what you'd be doing your whole life? Looking up people's buttholes? Or did you want to be an astronaut?"
Most people know Michael Lewis as the best-selling author of books like Moneyball, The Big Short, Home Game, and The Blind Side. But I also have the great pleasure of knowing him as a hilarious and dedicated friend. And I've also recently been enjoying his phenomenal new podcast, Against the Rules. On each episode of our show, we have a happiness guinea pig try a research-tested practice to bring more feelings of joy and connection into their life. And I'm really looking forward to having Michael Lewis as our happiness guinea pig today. So, Michael, did you like writing as a kid?
No.
No?
No. Didn't even occur to me. I associated writing with homework. The only time I ever wrote was when someone made me write.
Yeah.
And it was a distraction from basketball, baseball, and football. And so I got through it as quickly as I could and grudgingly. And I was so... I give you a really good example. This is a microcosm of my youth. In the seventh grade, we had to review Johnny Tremaine. And I flipped over the back cover without reading it. And there was a beautiful description of the book, of course, as there often is on the back cover. So I just copied it out and handed it in as my book report. It did not even occur to me this was a bad thing to do. I thought it was a shrewd thing to do, right? Like, I can't do better than that. Don't even have to read the book. And I got hauled into the principal's office. I got an A. It came back, A, see me. And the English teacher said, "Where'd you get this?" I said, "Back of the book."
Yeah.
Isn't that smart? And he goes, "That's called plagiarism." This is where I learned where plagiarism was. But so they actually tried to throw me out of the school. And my parents had to come in to stop me from getting thrown out.
Yeah.
But me writing was that.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't think I was going to be a writer one day.
Uh-huh. You often write about the funny things that people do around you. Like, your book Home Game is full of funny stories about your kids. So it's probably no surprise that when it came time for you to choose the happiness practice for our show, you chose one called Three Funny Things. What are the steps of the Three Funny Things practice? What'd you do?
Here's what I did. Every day, at the end of the day, before I went to bed, I'd take out a yellow notepad and I'd scribble down first three funny things, not the funniest. I didn't want to agonize over it, but three funny things that happened, the first three things that came to mind, along with a couple of notes about why I thought they were funny.
Uh-huh.
It was pretty easy to come up with the three funny things, although it got harder and harder the more I thought about it. It was less easy to explain to myself why they were funny, except in the crudest, broadest terms.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think in the same way, it's true that the minute you try to explain a joke, it ceases to be funny.
Yeah.
The more I tried to understand why it was funny, the less funny I found it. But nevertheless, I did this exercise every day, and I did it pretty religiously.
So your assignment was to write these three funny things every day for a week. So tell us some funny things.
The first thing I wrote down was actually what's funny is how it changes what's funny when you feel pressure to find things funny. I thought that it would be easier than it was because I laugh all day.
Yeah.
I mean, I must be laughing at something. I'm not a crazy person.
Yeah.
So then the next thing that happened was I got great pleasure out of a conversation I had not really listened to properly between myself and my son.
Uh-huh.
I needed to explain how the stock market worked. It works very complicated.
That's
now.
A tough one.
In this tape, I grab him out of bed and apologize him for getting him up in the morning.
Sorry to wake you up to do this.
No, it's fine.
All right.
And he's sitting at my desk, and I'm trying to show him on my computer how we buy stocks at Charles Schwab and so on.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking he knows nothing about this.
Yeah.
I mean, how could he? He's 11 years old. He doesn't, you know, I mean, I've never talked to him about the stock market. And he goes, I know all about the stock market.
At school, when I'm bored, I can just open up the stock market app, and it tells me how much a business is growing and making money.
I said, how do you know this? He says, I play in the stock market at school.
Wow.
And I say, what do you mean? How do you do that?
It's an iPad. It's on the iPad Pro they give us.
At school?
Yeah, there's this little thing on the iPad that says stocks, and I pressed on it. And now I just type fart on it, and Fart Talks came up, so I have that on my front page now.
Fart Talks?
Yeah, Fart Talks.
Is that a company?
Yep.
It's called Fart, how do you spell it?
F-A-R-T-O-X. Fart Talks.
What does it do? Let's just check this. That's really funny. Hold on one sec.
And my son has been following Fart Talks for the last year.
How's it doing?
Well, it's been going
up.
What
is it?
Well, it's not a company. I think it's some sort of index fund.
Uh-huh.
But in his mind, it was like a basket of farts. And he's watching the basket of farts go up and down. And he says, there are never any stories on it, but it moves around a lot. And so this conversation, I found the conversation hysterical. I thought it was funny. So then the next thing that happened was I was speaking to a group of tax accountants in the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami Beach. And they write insisting that my dress is to be business casual, appropriate to Miami Beach.
Yeah.
But I was packing. I realized that from my lifetime, when I go to speak to these kind of audiences, when they're in these kind of places, they all say they want you to look like you got a Miami Vice, but in fact, what they want you to look is highly uncomfortable being business casual. First thing is I go to give my business casual talk, and it was half the business conference and half like what Miami actually looks like.
Yeah.
And I just burst out laughing when I walked in.
Uh-huh.
Because it was just so shocking to see. It was like a strip club meets H&R Block. It was funny, and I thought, why is that funny? It's just the contrast.
Yeah.
And also the idea that these tax accountants had all showed up thinking, I'm going to Miami. But they still, you could bring the tax accountant to Miami, but you can't get the tax accountant out of the tax accountant.
So where did your sense of humor come from in your childhood? And how does it play out today as you look for funny things?
I was never punished for play or having fun or finding joy. I was always encouraged to do that, or at least not discouraged. And it has seemed to me that most of the rich things in my life, and it's not that they aren't sometimes hard, but they're also fun. If I'm not having fun with a book or a podcast or a screenplay, the audience is not having fun. So it's reinforced by what I do. Now, part of fun is laughter. And finding ways to extract the laughter from situations is to become a habit. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
So I coached, I don't know how many seasons in the softball league and the basketball leagues. And I found the best way to coach little kids was spend about half, three quarters of the time coaching the baseball and about a quarter of the time doing improv comedy. And I would have these improv comedy exercises that I'd put them through. And everybody would just have a ball.
Yeah.
You know? And it made them want to do everything else more.
Yeah. Lightens it up.
And I found just generally, I mean, when I'm feeling out of step with my own life, when I'm feeling like I'm not living properly, is when I'm having the least amount of fun.
Yeah.
So that, I think that humor is just like a subset of fun. Now, where people get their senses of humor, I mean, this is a mystery.
Yeah. Sometimes people feel when you do these practices that it sharpens your eye or your ear and you pick up the theme a little bit more.
The honest truth is I do go through life laughing a lot.
Yeah.
It's actually not that hard in theory for me to find three funny things a day.
Yeah.
However, the moment I have to write them down, it's a constraint and it's also, they feel less funny.
Yeah.
It didn't get easier. It got harder. It got so hard that the last day I was asking my 19-year-old daughter to give me a list of all her funny things unless I need to steal them.
How'd she do?
She was great. She was great. She was great. So, I mean, there were plenty of funny things, but the exercise itself, it didn't have the effect I thought it was going to have. And I'm trying to figure out why this is. It is true that when periods in my life I've kept a diary, it's been really enriching.
Yeah.
There's something about the act of keeping a diary that forces you to observe your life. It slows life down.
Yeah.
That's what it does.
Yeah.
It slows life down. It makes things memorable and sears into your brain stuff that you would just have forgotten. And it's a highly enriching experience. And it may have been that I just didn't play ball, you know, in the right spirit here. But what I did is I was just listing three funny things and making a couple little notes about why I thought it was funny. But I didn't actually, like, sit down and write. I just didn't have time. And that may have been partly why the exercise didn't completely take. On the other hand, I mean, I still had funny stuff. It was still coming, you know, all the way through.
You know, final question is, and it's interesting, like, people often take the practices and they take them in different directions. So how would you change this?
I'm only saying this because you're not going to do it to me. But I would have made me do the one I was least comfortable with rather than the one I was most comfortable with.
That's a good idea.
I think the fact that it was easy meant it had less effect.
Yeah.
And so if you asked me, I glanced at a couple of the other options before I instantly scrambled back to this. And one of them was like apologizing to someone you did something bad to. It'll never happen. So, but if I was forced to do it, it would probably have traumatizing effects that we could talk about, and I'd be a changed person and maybe even happier if I was still alive. I think that's probably the rule, the lesson here.
Yeah.
It's a backhanded one that
don't
let the person do the one they want to do.
Yeah.
Say, what's the one you least want to do? And then go do that one.
Excellent. Well, Michael Lewis, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for your funny things. Thank you for Against the Rules. It's a delight to listen to, and thanks for being a friend.
Always a pleasure talking to you, Dacher.
Support for The Science of Happiness comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/happiness. That's odoo.com/happiness. Odoo, modern management made simple. Writing down three funny things every day didn't seem to have a big impact on Michael, which is a good reminder that not every happiness practice is the right fit for everyone. It's really important to try out different types of practices. But in general, we know that humor has positive effects in relationships. It can serve as a buffer to stress. It helps us deal with negative emotions, and it even helps teachers teach more effectively. It can also boost your immune system and improve blood flow in your body, which is good for your heart. And though Michael didn't love it, research has found a lot of benefits to writing down the funny things in our lives. Willibald Ruch at the University of Zurich had people try the three funny things practice in a study. Every day for a week, they wrote down three funny things that happened to them that day and why they thought they were funny. Ruch had another group just write down early childhood memories. He measured everyone's levels of happiness and depression before the study and then for months afterwards. The people who did the three funny things practice saw significant improvements, much more than the other group did.
Happiness did increase from pre to post. Depression was lowered immediately, and then it stayed low, but it was not significant all the time. So the stronger effect here was on raising happiness. This effect, the increase in happiness, was still there 1 month afterward, 3 months afterwards, and 6 months afterwards, which is surprising because we thought it might fade out over time. It's so easy to remember what was funny in your life. The induction is very quick, so having a journal with all your humor memories could be very beneficial. I mean, if you have a period of time where you don't feel that great or where you want to feel better, just browsing through the journal and seeing all those funny memories where we are with friends and laughing about whatever weird thing has an effect that can be used again over and over.
If you'd like to try the three funny things practice, visit our Greater Good in Action website at ggia.berkeley.edu. I'm Dacher Keltner. Thanks for joining me on The Science of Happiness. Our podcast is a co-production of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and PRI-PRX with production assistance from Jenny Cataldo and Ben Manila of BMP Audio. Our producer is Shuka Kalantari. Our associate producer is Annie Berman. Our executive producer is Jane Park. Our editor-in-chief is Jason Marsh. Special thanks to Pushkin Industries for the clip from Michael's Against the Rules podcast and UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. You can learn more about the science of happiness and find related articles, videos, quizzes, all kinds of stuff on our website, greatergood.berkeley.edu. And shoot us an email. Tell us what you think about what you heard. Send it to greater@berkeley.edu.